Now, I'm not trying to jinx anything, but we are now in the longest bull market ever. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. More on that bull market in just a moment, but first, a review. The president's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, has pleaded guilty to 8 different crimes, among them breaking campaign finance laws, including paying for or facilitating hush money to 2 women who said they'd had affairs with President Trump, and that Cohen had done so at the direction of the president. This was minutes after the president's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was convicted of tax and bank fraud. Markets appear mostly unfazed by all of this. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down just 20 points. That's less than 0.1%. The NASDAQ is also down less than 0.1%. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.82%. And with those numbers, we are officially in the longest bull market on record. Yes, this depends on how you slice the numbers, but a lot of analysts see it at least as a notable day. The S&P 500 hit bottom on March 9th, 2009, when it closed at just 676. It's been more or less heading upwards ever since, and right now it's at 2,862. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra has more.
This is the longest bull market ever, at least by one definition. Ryan Dietrich is a market strategist at LPL Research.
You talk to 10 people and you maybe get 10 answers as to exactly what a bull market is.
A common answer, and the one we're using here, is that it's a bull market when the S&P 500 rises by 20% and keeps going. It becomes a bear market if the index closes down by more than 20%. Franklin White at PNC says whichever definition you use, a bull market is a good thing for the economy. Retirement plans are worth more, and people feel more secure about their financial futures.
And when people become confident in their futures, they're much more willing to participate and spend in the economy.
While this may be the longest bull market ever, it's not the greatest. That title goes to the last one in the 90s, during the tech bubble. Then stocks jumped more than 400%. This time, they only gained around 300%. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
Susan Schmidt is a senior vice president and portfolio manager at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas and has a lot of experience tracking the market. Joins us now. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
So as we have just heard, we are in a very long market rally. And one thing that's notable about that is all of the political drama, not just now, but over the past almost 2 years we've had. It doesn't seem to have derailed this rally. Why is that?
We've seen the market really learn how to understand how this new administration communicates. And also, importantly, the two things the market values most, tax reform and deregulation, were pushed through and enacted. They're not a question mark anymore, and they're very favorable for business.
One interesting piece of data we've learned about this bull market is that a lot of retail investors have not been participating in it. How is this current rally different from previous rallies?
We did see there was an education of using the stock market as an investing tool in the 90s, and that pushed a lot of retail money into the stock market and became very active, and that helped the stock market reach new highs. One of the reasons that this recovery has been so long and we've seen such a prolonged bull market is because we've had such low interest rates. And while interest rates have been very low throughout the world, that has made stocks more attractive. And the retail investors haven't necessarily been pouring back into the market, but the need to have a higher yielding investment has driven the underlying. And so we still see, you know, we're reaching new market highs, even without the retail investor being a strong participant.
Susan Schmidt, Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We recently heard from Tom in Basel, Switzerland, who wrote to tell us that he appreciates and trusts the way that Marketplace analyzes the economy without foolishness or bias and makes him think about issues in different ways. Now, if you agree with Tom, please join him as a Marketplace investor by donating online at marketplace.org. Thanks to Tom and everyone who makes our work possible.
Traveling abroad can be a magical experience, but it can also lead to some magical thinking about money and spending, especially when you're looking at currencies you aren't used to. In Europe, for example, stuff is generally more expensive than it is here, but the prices are in euros or pounds, which apparently for some people are easy to ignore. Judith Kogan has more.
Jane Korn and her husband, Robert Madoff, are physicians from Minneapolis and world travelers.
So we were just in Vienna, and we wanted to go to the opera. The only tickets that we could get were 200 euro. So that's what, like $240 or something like that?
But she thought of it as $200. Still expensive, but not quite as much.
When we travel in Europe, we just don't even bother converting.
Her husband explains why.
Most of the time I'm traveling, it's in the context of vacation, at which point I try not to think about money too much.
Jane Korn acknowledges that being able to do this is a luxury, and that paying with credit cards facilitates the illusion.
You don't see the conversion, really, until you get home.
April Benson is a financial therapist in New York City. She says the way we think about money can depend on where we are.
When we're on vacation, the usual constraints that we have against overspending are much less in evidence. We are in a different setting, we're seeing different people, we're doing different things.
But even Americans on tight budgets, and not exactly on vacation, find themselves pretending it's a dollar sign on the bill.
I'm most likely to do that when I'm just out with friends.
Jeff King is a student at the Royal Academy of Music in London.
Anytime you go out with people in Britain, you're expected to buy drinks in rounds and not individually. And that means like you spend 20 or 30 pounds on four or five drinks.
At a recent exchange rate, that's $30 to $40.
Thinking of it as $20 or $30 certainly helps.
April Benson says rationalization typically bolsters the magical thinking around money.
Whatever positive outcome we're looking for, we insert that into the buying decision.
Americans spent more than $22 billion in the UK and Eurozone last year. And that's dollars, not pounds or euros. I'm Judith Kogan for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.